Hey listeners, thanks for tuning in again. For this episode, we would be remiss not to issue just a slight content warning. While nothing in our discussion gets particularly graphic or needlessly hideous, we do have quite a few tough discussions in this episode, including a discussion about animal abuse and experimentation. If these topics may bring you distress, by all means, feel free to tune out and do something you find more comfortable. As always, please take care, enjoy responsibly, and for those of you who are tuning in, on to the episode.
After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
So on that subject, like, where do you draw the line between, like, celebrity and public figure? Just out of curiosity.
I feel... That's such a hard question. That's such a really interesting question. I feel like celebrities are, like... They don't... I don't want to say they don't matter, but they don't matter. You know what I mean? Like, Fauci, I feel like, is a public figure because he's doing something important. Celebrities doing movie, because I don't want to say art doesn't matter, because it obviously does. Art is important to society and all that. But, like, I don't know. I think it is almost purely subjective.
It's probably tied to, like, how much economic or political power. That's probably, like, a good metric or heuristic for it.
You think so? Do you think it's possible to be a public figure with zero economic power?
I mean, that's the, again, it's a tricky question, right? Because, you know, the Kardashians are much wealthier than both of us, you know, but do they hold the levers of power in our system? Probably not.
I mean, one of them's a billionaire or something like that, right?
Probably, yeah. And that's what I'm trying to say, right? Is like, you know, billionaires as a class versus individual people who get media time. Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, I looked it up and it says all celebrities are public figures, but not all public figures are celebrities. I can't even comprehend what that means. I would say the other way around.
Like, there's probably like a bunch of like C-suites executives that hold a lot of like financial power, but you know they're just out of the public eye, you know, or like.
But in my head, being a public figure means you're in the public eye. I guess that's my concern.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing too, right? Where it's like. When it comes to fame and celebrity culture, celebrity worship, I think there's this, like, I don't know if I'm the best person to describe this, but now I'm interested in maybe looking into this, right? Where it's like, there is a social and societal ritual of, like, people who seek out the public's attention and people who engage in doling out that attention, and then more explicitly, like, condemning certain people to public ridicule and certain people to like public worship, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to public ridicule, I feel like a lot of times when it comes to like these like celebrities or public figures, people kind of get like they get drunk with power almost to the point where it's like they feel like they can like control way more than they can, and I feel like it's like a feedback loop where we keep giving these people more and more power, and then they keep going, okay, so I'm gonna take more, and then you end up with, you know, your Jeff Bezos, your Elon Musk, your, you know, the worst people out here.
Yeah, and it's like there's an ideal like figure for this, right? Which is like, you know, like the royal families and like noble families in the past would like be the subject of like the public's like ridicule and gossip, you know, like what the noblemen were getting up to in private was probably the subject of a lot of gossip back in the day. And you kind of see that with like the UK royal family, right? You know, where it's like there's all this like gossip made about Harry and Meghan, the Queen herself when she was alive, even like the I don't know how much it is under like King Charles now, but like, you know, like again, Princess Diana and all that was like huge. And even like you could argue like there's probably some like social control or like culture war stuff you could examine with like royal family tabloid stuff, right? But then in the US, like, we just don't have those literal aristocrats and literal noble houses, right? We've got like people who seek it out somewhat willingly, you know, whether it is like people in finance, people in business, people in the arts, or to varying degrees, right? Like, you have politicians at all levels and all on like a spectrum of this behavior, of those who seek out a kind of celebrity status and those who try to stay out of the public eye as much as they can.
Yeah, that's always been something that's interested to me, because it's like, if I ended up with that kind of like power in society, if I ended up with that much like, you know, political ability, in what world would I become a public figure? Like, I would do everything I can to just sit in the background, say nothing, right? But like, instead, what do we get? We get these, like, you know, we get the Zuckerberg versus Elon fight promotions. You know, we get the Donald Trumps, who could have just lived his entire life being rich and just like leaving everyone alone, and, you know, still being like someone who was not necessarily loved, but like not hated by half of the country, you know. But instead, these people, they just need to get that public opinion. They need to get that validation almost. I'm not even sure what to call it.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, let's really try starting, like, to tie this to, like, the topic of our discussion. So welcome back to the Greenhouse, everybody. We're back with our long-awaited episode on Elon Musk. Joining me today is my co-host and Greenhouse Gaslighting tech correspondent, John.
How's it going? How's it going, viewers, you know?
So, as you were mentioning earlier, right, like, the tech CEO, this vision of like the entrepreneur, this, you know, these like wonder kid geniuses in tech and business, right? It's like a new archetype of public figure or celebrity in our modern culture, right? You know, of like these guys who come up with some kind of innovation in the neoliberal market or in technology. Oftentimes not even something they came up with themselves, but because they could grow their company like very quickly, or they could, you know, convincingly set up something as like a new market, you know, they buy up a lot of economic and social goodwill in the process. And I think that's a good way to examine maybe the social context that Elon Musk himself sits in, right? You know, he comes in as this kind of like equivalent figure to like the Zuckerbergs and Jack Dorsey's of the world, in a way, you know?
Yeah, and like a part of me wants to kind of talk out of my ass for a little bit and say that Jobs was like the start of it all. Like, not necessarily in the way that we like glorify these like essentially these like beacons of capitalism, but I feel like Steve Jobs kind of like really popularized this archetype of like tech billionaire, super smart, you know, can get it done. And I feel like when it comes to Musk, he's kind of trying to fulfill that role that's already been carved out for him. It's very interesting because, like, it's the people who have kind of seen this coming, the people who already didn't like Musk. It wasn't a surprise when we saw, for example, earlier this year when Twitter started crashing and burning. This wasn't like a thing that like no one has ever seen before. But I think that what you said was super accurate in that, like, he did essentially buy up the public's goodwill and good graces to the point where he has so many fans and they are willing to do anything for him and they believe that he can do no wrong.
Yeah, and it's like we haven't even begun to touch where we're at on the outline. So this is we're probing new ground in Greenhouse Gaslighting, you know, tradition, where it's like the tech CEOs are not like the robber barons of old, you know? Like, the robber barons kind of had to like buy their way back into the public's good graces with, aside from literal bribes, you know, like their big shows of philanthropy and like social responsibility that they would try to like hide themselves behind. But I think like in the modern era, you know, there's this push to like present certain, because it didn't start with the tech industry, right? But you had guys like Jack Welch at GE, mm-hmm. whose whole policy was to, you know, strip GE for all the copper wiring and make it a more, you know, in line with neoliberal principles style of company, right? And he's hailed as this kind of genius. You have, I mean, even there's even like all the GM and Ford execs who have been kind of like lionized, like Lee Iacocca, for example. And even like the guys in like Ford versus Ferrari are kind of lionized in that way in the auto industry, right? But when it comes to like the tech CEO as a unique like archetype, it sits at that like unique intersection of the California ideology, Silicon Valley as like a staff record label and a motherfucking crew, and also like the very real intangible effect of computers and electronics making it to the consumer level, right? So you said like Steve Jobs, and I think Steve Jobs is definitely in the vein. I'd say like it's a spectrum between Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, you know?
No, that's fair.
But and I think like again, like the funny thing that these two guys have in common, and even Musk has in common with these guys, is like, you know, Bill Gates wasn't even a developer of like what we consider Microsoft to be or the Windows platform. He was just a guy who figured out how to bundle shit together. Steve Jobs didn't really like, you know, make Apple what it was with the computing software and hardware. That was guys like, you know, Steve Wozniak. But we hail these singular figures as like Napoleonic style figures in technology, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, because ultimately they're like the public face of the company. And I kind of feel like that kind of ties into what we talked about before, in that where, you know, why do these people want this good public grace? If I was a billionaire, I'd sit back and do nothing. Well, these guys have kind of like capitalized on like their image, in that if the company succeeds, they succeed, right? Like Elon Musk, perfect example. If Tesla does anything cool, you know, Elon Musk essentially gets to claim all of the accolades, everything for it. Even though we all know that Elon Musk is not, you know, in the factories putting his own cars together. He's not the one, you know, writing code that's running on satellites. We all know that's not the case, but like we like to pretend almost, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing where it's like the genius persona or genius public image like ends up being so pernicious or countervailing that to the public at large, or to like even like mainstream elements of media, like bad behavior goes easily forgiven and forgotten, you know, like Bill Gates being this kind of like singular genius who became like the richest man at a time, you know, that public vision of him is so pernicious that people forget that like he basically threw a tantrum in court when he just had to pay like a little bit more as a settlement or as in taxes or whatever for unfair business practices, or like his connections to Epstein,
or him, the fact that he like, you know, I don't want to say sexually assaulted, but the fact that he was very creepy towards, you know, women that was working, you know?
Yeah. And it's just like, again, like his weird, like obsession with, there's a lot of weird conspiracies about Bill Gates that I don't personally entertain, but there is a good reason to be suspicious of like his kind of eugenics-ish white savior approach to Africa. Or like his desire to like buy up all this farmland. Like it is weird that like this rich guy who on closer examination seems to have some weird character issues, you know, like trying to insert himself into global affairs. Much like Elon Musk, you know. Steve Jobs didn't, I don't think he lived long enough to do some of that, right? But there's like a lot of funny stuff about him just having like kind of really facile ideas about how to self-medicate his own cancer, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. When it comes to that aspect of Steve Jobs and the whole like medical issues that he had, part of me, I end up being so confused, right? Because it's like, he is this dude who, in my view, in my understanding of him, was like science-y-ish. Like he understood design. He understood, you know, some aspect of technology. There's no way you can do that without, you know, having some kind of analytical, being good at analyzing things, being good at, you know, some sort of scientific method. And yet here we go with actual real science and biology, and he just goes, nah. So I don't know. That part has always conflicted with me. But with the current topic at hand and how it relates to science and technology, let's get into Neuralink.
Well, we can't even get into Neuralink without unpacking Musk himself.
Even better.
Yeah, because it's like we got to talk about what crazy stuff Neuralink is. You have to sift through, and this is like very like tough grist for the mill, if you really think about it, of like Elon Musk the man versus Elon Musk the myth, you know? And it's crazy how he has enjoyed, possibly since 2012 or so, right, this like Tony Stark style reputation among so many people.
Yeah, it blows my mind. Like the Elon Musk fans that genuinely believe that he can just do no wrong, you know? Like, I remember having a conversation with a guy who, literally at a barbershop, who was another software engineer, and we got into it about Musk, and he was like, oh, Elon Musk is like, you know, one of the first and only self-made billionaires. I'm like, he's not self-made. Like, if you idolize this man, but you don't know anything about him, how can you idolize him? That's the part that, like, blows my mind. The amount of stuff that, like, people just not know about him. The ignorance that his fan base has.
And it's like, the only thing I can tell about this is it's like an indictment of our society that no one seems to fucking read anything anymore, you know? That these myths are so easily replicable and repeatable that they just take on the identity of truth with no deeper examination, you know? Whether it's like the myths about Bill Gates, as we mentioned above, or, with Musk, right? I think the biggest thing is that he has a lot of goodwill from allegedly founding Tesla. That was never his baby, you know?
Right.
And just like, you know, again, like greenwashing is probably like one of the most underused and understudied terms, right? But basically for him to have like bought a lot of public goodwill off of allegedly, you know, reliable electrical vehicles, which is a loaded discussion in itself. You know, do electric vehicles help us holistically deal with the problem of climate change? I'd argue no, right? It buys him this kind of like futurist status that in a society like ours where there is this like realistic current of like a lack of a future, you know, in public discourse when it comes to like who's bringing the ideas to the table. Musk kind of sets himself up as this like era containing figure who offers something. But in practice, you know, he's kind of shown himself to be this like stubborn, self-righteous, and self-inserting type of figure in all his ventures. Whether it was his early days at PayPal, as people have chronicled in the past, whether it was, you know, the true origins of how Tesla was started, and people have done there's been a lot of good reporting on the subject, right?
Yeah, there's absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, a really interesting quote I heard someone say about Musk was that, like, if you love Musk so much, why is that no one likes working with him? You know, he's known for
Throughout his career, people have nothing really good to say about working with him.
Exactly. He's not known for the best ideas. He's not known for, you know, having a good relationship with his employees. He's not really known for anything that's positive. He's just the Tesla guy. He's the genius, you know?
Also, a funny story about him or his family that I recall from like a podcast or something is that the Musk family isn't actually South African. They are, of all things, Canadian.
What?
And I think his, like, whatever ancestor decided to move to South Africa because it wasn't racist enough in Canada for them.
Oh, that's awesome.
So again, like, the whole thing about... I mean, again, everything from, like, him being this, like, South African emerald mine heir to this, like, airheaded CEO to, like, this bizarre, like, sex pervert who is obstinate and self, you know, just sees himself as above humanity in a way, right? It's very telling that he enjoys all the hagiography and sycophantry that people online have for him. You know, he loves the attention and he loves this misplaced faith in him. So he loves to present himself as like this Tony Stark to the public. But as we've come to see, the Emperor has no clothes. Yeah, and I just wonder, like, in your estimation, like, what is it with like Elon Musk dick riders? Like, what is it about Musk that like makes them fold over so easily? Or like, what is it they get out of this? Do you have any idea?
I do. I actually have so many opinions about this. I need to watch how I say this. I think that a lot of it comes down to the good old American dream. I think that when people talk about Musk, especially the people who love him so much, they tend to feel, a lot of them are just software bros. Let's be 100% honest. A lot of them are just really big software bros who ultimately were sold a dream in which like they would be like, you know, it's the same. It's essentially the exact same thing as the American dream. This idea that you can make it with all of your hard work and all of your dedication. If you do the right things, eventually good things will happen and you'll be rich. You'll have that white picket fence. This Elon Musk is essentially the personification of the tech industry's version, which is why he's propped so highly up. This guy comes, quote unquote, from nothing. This guy who had no contacts, who just thought his way out of everything. He arrives on the scene and makes really cool apps, and eventually he makes it big. That's essentially this American dream lie that they're telling you about him. And I think that the problem is that when you do not surround yourself with people who are like who are going to think about that critically, and you just kind of look into the news and you look into like the like how the mainstream media is like treating him, you see that he does hang around with a lot of really cool technology and he does some cool stuff sometimes, maybe, so maybe they're right. You know, it's a very easy thing to fall into it when you end up like, when you want a career in the tech industry, it's a very easy trap to fall into.
Yeah, it's kind of like how the stereotype of like the finance bro has kind of like crossed over into tech as the industry has shifted somewhat, you know, or as the profits have shifted into a different industry.
Yeah, no, it's essentially the same thing. Yeah, that's a perfect example. It's like the finance bro is this guy who thinks he's going to, you know, invest in the right stock.
Infinite growth, all that nonsense. Exactly.
And like, you know, none of it's going to happen. None of it's sustainable. Like none of that. It's a dream. You know, it's a dream that it's very easy to sell people on so long as, you know, they keep working, which is ultimately what it boils down to, right? Elon Musk benefits from his image because a lot of people who ends up hiring our software engineers who he wants to have them keep working, you know?
And that's a funny thing too about like the intersection of the tech bro as a subculture, right? As it pertains to like the Musk fandom, because
As I love much that as you called that a fandom. I'm sorry, I didn't really cut you off, but calling it the Musk fandom is amazing.
I could call it a cult if I was being mean about it, you know. Also, I would be remiss if I did not call him Elon Musty at least once during the recording. My fiance requested that. Hi.
I'm sorry, I don't know. Did you mean elongated muskrat?
Old apartheid Ellie, I'll tell you what. So, you know, like, I kind of wonder, like, where exactly tech bros fit. Because, like, I wouldn't necessarily call finance bros any smarter than tech bros, both today and in the past. But the thing about, like, the finances of the tech industry in comparison are even more, like, frothy and confusing to understand. Because the tech industry itself kind of sits in a bubble, as we commonly understand it. And Musk's net worth and even like the assets and finances of his various industries also don't seem to make 100% sense either. The way that he can leverage a buyout of one company to account for a loss in another and vice versa. There's better reporting on this subject than what I'm delivering here. But the point I'm trying to make here is that Musk, being this kind of genius businessman, doesn't even make sense by the traditional metrics. And I would argue, you know, to some extent that, you know, all billionaires have made their wealth by theft, through parasitism, or through a gross over-exaggeration of their own personal efforts, right? But Musk is kind of riding on the teat of public subsidy, more so than most, I would reckon, you know? If you take a look at Tesla, for instance, right? There's plenty to be said about the subpar quality of the automobiles, the issues with logistics and delivery of vehicles at Tesla, their very rabid anti-union stance at their plants. That's a whole rabbit hole in of itself. But very specifically, you know, Tesla doesn't, it's not making traditional automobiles, you know, it's not operating in the same vein as Ford or General Motors, for instance. They're basically making novelty vehicles that are subsidized off of EV or carbon credits to stay in the green.
I mean, yeah,
this isn't even revenue in the traditional sense as we understand it, you know?
Yeah, and it's super interesting also once you realize that a lot of Elon Musk's net worth, obviously he's a billionaire, right? So most of his net worth is not going to be liquid in any, you know, way, shape, or form. But a lot of it is just his own, like, Tesla stock, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you think about that, and you think about, like, oh, why isn't Elon Musk, like, you know, why is he always in the media trying to, you know, sound super cool or do all this stuff? It's because those, you know, those nerdy, socially awkward tech bros, you know, who, you know, love Elon Musk because they see themselves in him. They look at that and they go, oh, wow, he's just like me for real, for real. And then Tesla's, you know, stock price jumps up another 100, right? And Elon Musk gets more money. Like, it's insane how much, like, yes, the company itself is just riding on just smoke, on nothing but just government subsidies. Like you said earlier, the cars are just terrible. Like, there's so many instances of, like, Teslas just swerving for no reason. They're bad on, like, certain painted roads. If a road is a specific way, like, you could literally die. Tons of malfunctions with the batteries. Another very interesting one is the fact that your battery indicator could also just be lying to you. Like, you could be driving somewhere and then your car dies, and then even though it says you had a couple hundred miles to the next charger, you don't. Like, things like that. It's like these things get completely swept under the rug, and it's all literally due to the fact that this man is capitalizing off of his own personal image. Like, it's insane to think about.
Yeah, it's like personal image as a performance, but you're really, like, getting investors and shareholders off of that. Meanwhile, every board of directors seems to have nothing nice to say about him, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
And also just like his desire or like, you know, failures to insert himself into like the public sphere, right? You had there was that famous story of there was the kids who got trapped in the cave in Thailand, right? And Musk is self-inserting himself into that one, trying to invent some kind of submarine, and basically does nothing to help, right?
But calls the other dude who is trying to help a pedophile, remember that?
Right, I remember this. I remember this. And it's just like, why would he invest himself into that and not even help, but just like get attention made, right? Or even recently this year, right? I mean, now it's definitely a lot more petty, you know? Where he's like trying to do MMA matches with Zuckerberg. And I don't think I would want to be in a cage match with Zuckerberg. I think like that guy eats like raw meat and fights like crocodiles. He looks that kind of guy.
He looks like he's a lizard, man.
He literally is. I'm not saying that to be mean. Like he literally does. Like I think he's leaning into it. Like
yeah. Like I feel like you're gonna grab his arm and it's gonna detach and regrow back later. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to fight that. I'm not trying to fight him.
Well, I mean, even then, it's like Musk now is like he's trying to like make solutions that nobody fucking asked for, like the Hyperloop in Vegas, for example, right? How does building an underground vacuum seal tunnel that only goes one way solve transit issues?
Exactly. Yeah, I don't even know. Even with more about his failed ventures, with again with Neuralink, this idea that like putting a chip in your brain is gonna fix autism or something. Like I don't.
Oh, we're definitely gonna get into that.
I would. Yeah, man. It's just I feel like because of the fact that he's trying to sell a dream as opposed to a product, the limitations is just as big as what he pretends they can be. You know.
Yeah. So I also just want to mention this point because like I feel like this is worth bringing up. There was a debacle with Starlink, which is a subsidiary of SpaceX or something.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Musk also self-inserted himself into the Ukraine war. And there was a statement from the Pentagon that like it's very telling, where the involvement of Elon Musk in the Russo-Ukrainian war has been met with concerns. His influence has been described as more like a nation state than an individual. A Pentagon insider commented in 2022 that Elon Musk hasn't been elected. No one decided to give him that power. He has it because of the technology and the company that he built. And basically, like, the Ukrainian government wants him to offer the Starlink service in Russia so that they can spy on Russian positions using the technology. Which is crazy, right? Because it's like, so this consumer grade like tech can be used to spy. You're admitting it can be used to spy, and also you want to use it in an offensive sense.
Right.
And the board of directors at SpaceX, I think, was like, we can't do that. That seems like a liability.
Yeah, it's so crazy because like this wasn't like Russia saying, you know what I mean? This is the words of the United States military. Like, this is the Pentagon saying this.
The Pentagon's saying, like, this seemed like too much.
Literally. The Pentagon's like, whoa, bro, calm down. You know? And what can you say to that? It's so ridiculous.
I just wanted to mention this, too. Like, people were, like, spreading this weird lie on Twitter recently that, like, Starlink was being used to restore internet access to Gaza.
No, I've never heard that. I don't know if that's true.
No, because like you had people out of Palestine, and like the Twitter has just ended up being like one of the few places to get on the ground information from Gaza. And people from Gaza were basically saying like, "What do you mean? Like, Starlink is giving us the internet? It's whatever we had before that they tried to like set up in the middle of like bombings from the IDF."
Exactly. Yeah, I'm looking at an article saying that. Starlink, they have no idea if or when it's ever going to be operational. It would genuinely surprise me if that happened.
Yeah, it's just again like this bizarre desire of like the billionaire class to insert themselves as like private actors in world affairs, particularly to like influence like libertarian style outcomes. Is it's bizarre.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's like, I'm sure billionaires get bored, you know, like what else are they going to do with all that power and all this, you know, all this money, all this power, all this technology? They're going to do something, and it's going to be some dumb shit. It always is. It always is.
Yeah.
Why feed people when we can, you know, play around with, you know, entire nations?
I mean, hell, even like Peter Thiel is the one, like, you can argue, like, if it wasn't for this guy, like, we wouldn't have the weird tradcath and like resurgence of anti-wokeism, quote unquote, in like the right-wing media sphere. I don't know how much of an effect Thiel is having, but he's been trying to bankroll candidates in the Republican sphere, and at least like that's more of the traditional way like the elites like get involved in politics, right? Is through like political patronage and electioneering. But Musk is patently bizarre in this way. I think a lot. It's interesting that he comes around in the same era as Trump, where they're both these hyper individualistic, self-aggrandizing figures who build these like cults of personality around them, but their end motives and even like their goals aren't necessarily solid. They're kind of ephemeral and driven by their like most base desires.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. I feel like people like these types of billionaires who feel like they have the urge to insert themselves into things, I feel like that is almost like a natural consequence of the structure of our society. It's like, again, we give these people this kind of power, we allow this to happen, and I don't know of a valid like tangible solution to this issue. You know, like there should not be one man in charge of whether or not an entire country gets in. That's insane, you know.
I mean, I would argue you would need a more democratized government to facilitate a goal like this, of course, but I think you would have to nationalize the tech sector to some extent just to bring it under like some kind of oversight and control, you know.
Nationalizing, that's interesting.
It's again, I don't know how that would work in practice, right? But it's like, as you mentioned, you know, like our society as structured and as we understand it to be, especially its most ardent proponents in practice, you know, having free Asian billionaires was the natural result of things, if not always the goal, you know.
That's fair. I think exact opposite might be the solution. Not necessarily like privatization, but open source. Like, you know, I'm a free and open source boy.
Right, right.
You know, I'm a casual Linux enjoyer. I feel like forcing open source licensing, completely like eliminating this idea of private property and private code, would essentially just delete Elon Musk out of our society. But you know what, can we, you know, that's,
I mean, yeah,
that's,
you're
a,
literally,
that's a pipe dream.
But yeah, but like, yeah, like open source is a way to put power back in the hands of the people, so to speak. So there, it's at least a step towards a solution. I'm not going to downplay that.
Yeah, fair. Go ahead, sorry.
I just felt like I couldn't not say this before we start diving into Neuralink, right? But I think it's been very damaging the way in which Twitter as a platform has been hollowed out and made somewhat of a hostile and like less usable presence under Musk's tenure and ownership of Twitter, right? I will admit that, you know, like I was definitely sounding the drum on, you know, log off, touch grass. Of course, you know, we could all stand to be on the internet a bit less, but Twitter was a kind of it was like a public marketplace of ideals. It was the place where like all these figures in social and political discourse were gathered. You know, it just was the place, you know. And to have it be rendered like unusable to a certain extent it's not even like, you know, the app it once was. It's been flooded with bots, and just like really weird like behaviors, and has just become like a less accessible and community building place. You could argue, of course, that Twitter never was meant for that. It never should have been that, you know, especially for us on like in the US political left scene, right? I think a lot of people were relegated to Twitter, especially as Facebook got more hostile, I think, post 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was bad for all of us to be online. I'll admit, you know, it's easier to be radical on the internet and, you know, post your hot takes than you know, have a praxis. But there is a tangible loss to losing an online space like that, especially when social spaces need to be taken back, you know? So I definitely mourn the loss of Twitter's initial like usability and somewhat solid left presence, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Musk was very intentional about doing that.
Oh, you think he did it on purpose?
Well, especially because if you look at like the right wing environments, you know, like it's, I mean, basically like libs of TikTok and other like right wing, high follow accounts are like making money off of their shit now. You had, you know, Tucker Carlson doing his propaganda show on Twitter for a bit. You had Ron DeSantis, hosted by Elon Musk, you know, on a Twitter space to launch his campaign on Twitter. You had, I mean, last week, you know, PragerU bought up a bunch of ad time and like web space on Twitter to promote this like propagandistic documentary of theirs that was anti-trans, you know? So I think the website has definitely taken a turn for the worse.
No, I think you're right. I mean, even back in 2020, there was the second Elon touched Twitter, we get, you know, COVID missing. We can even talk about the misinformation coming from, or misinformation on Twitter about the, you know, invasion of Ukraine and, you know, various.
Or even recently, like so much misinformation coming out about like about Gaza, right? So it's like, you know, It's also just been a hostile space on Twitter lately for like anyone who's just trying to have a mild, you know, free Palestine perspective. It's been rough even then.
Yeah, see, I haven't really been on Twitter. I never really had an account, never really went on. So it's interesting.
You're not missing anything.
fair. It is interesting hearing this kind of like timeline, this progression, this deeper and deeper fall from grace that Twitter is having. And I'm even looking up some of the stuff that's happened in the past about Twitter, and some of the stuff either completely flew over my radar or I just completely forgot about. Like, there was a whole fucking child porn scandal on Twitter because of Elon Musk and because of like accounts that he allowed to be unbanned and unsuspended, and, you know, pictures that were shared. Like, there's just so much like crazy shit that's happened with Twitter ever since Elon took over. Back to your point, I do think it is very hard to pretend, not even to pretend, I do think that the idea that this is like a conspiracy, I don't think that's that unfounded, honestly.
Yeah, I was trying to find an article just because, like, so much has happened since then that I was like, what did I forget? But it's like, yeah, Twitter was in a major child safety lawsuit in 2021 after removing CSE content from its platform.
Crazy.
And, like, there's just so much, like, weird, like, there's a lot more bots on the website. People are reporting, like, running into like more like gore and like suggestive content on the site now. So yes. It's just I don't know, like the quality of the site has gone down, and like as like the website gets flooded with more stuff like this, you know, people are just understandably going to be like, well, I don't want to look at this shit and leave. And where people go online now is it's up for grabs, you know, but there has been no Twitter alternative that people are flocking to significantly.
Yeah, I don't think Mastodon's ever going to like take the full. Mastodon's not going to be the new Twitter, I don't think. As much as I think the technology is interesting, I don't think it's going to be like the new hot thing.
No, I think like Blue Sky probably has like the closest user experience to Twitter, and even then it's just, it's still invite only. It's not everyone's there. Plus, like a lot of people just post Twitter have been like, I would rather not post. I'm just done with it, which is understandable. And I think like that's how I'm feeling about it too. Like I'm online a lot less these days, which is giving me more time to work on the show, believe it or not.
I mean, that's a net positive. But you know what I mean? It's so goofy because it's like, if Elon Musk had bought Twitter and handled it properly, we would not be having this conversation, you know? Like, the fact that advertisers are pulling out, the fact that, you know, he's reinstating, you know, accounts that are sharing, you know, disgusting shit. Like, he could have made so much money off the platform. But now we can, you know, look and see, and like, he's losing a ridiculous amount of money from it.
Exactly, but that's not like, that would be an indictment of almost any other CEO, but doesn't seem to stick to him. And like Twitter isn't even his most sordid venture, because what we were hoping to discuss today was Neuralink, which my God, I would argue is like probably, I mean, has Neuralink been shut down or is it still like an existing Musk project?
Sure, I'm pretty sure he's still accepting human trials for it.
Oh man.
Yeah, it's so
let's get into it. Let's get into it.
Because I think this is so interesting in the most not great way. I think we should throw a trigger warning on this episode.
I'm gonna throw a trigger warning at the start of the episode, and I think I'm gonna release this as like a multi-part discussion.
Ah, gotcha. Okay, smart.
Yeah, maybe release it as one or two episodes.
Okay, so Neuralink, it gets founded in Elon Musk by 2016, and he reveals it the year after. In which I remember when this happened. I remember when this happened because it was 2017 when I first heard about it. I was a sophomore in college. Was I a sophomore or a freshman?
That was about the time. Yeah.
And like, I remember everyone in all of my CS classes losing their mind, talking about how great this was going to be. And I remember I had like people like pulling up the announcement, like it was like a recorded thing, in which it like, I don't know. Even then I looked at it and I was like, okay, this is cool. But like, what? Like, what do you mean putting a chip in someone's head is going to cure mental illness? Like, how are you gonna fix Alzheimer's and autism with a chip? I was always kind of a skeptic about this, but throughout my classes and everyone who I know that was like really big on the tech bros, they all were like super positive. One thing I didn't know when I was actually following through and like doing research for this was that neuroscientists and brain computer interface experts were skeptical due to a lack of scientific details and feasible concerns. And I feel like that is something that is almost like a staple of any project of Elon Musk. I feel like if you like, he gives you a dream, he doesn't tell you at all how he's going to do it or, you know, any type of detailed explanation, and people love it, you know? And I feel like that.
This is a recurring theme, right? Because there was already like the OceanGate nonsense where this asshole thinks he can put people in a soda can and get them to the bottom of the Titanic. And anyone with like any technical expertise is like, there's no way this is going to work. I'm just going to tell you right now, it's not going to work. And the guy immediately gets fired, right? And Musk is no stranger to that phenomenon either. In fact, like, he was probably doing it longer than the CEO of OceanGate, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, even back, like, if you look at some of Elon Musk's earlier stuff, like I know we just got on Neuralink. I'm sorry, I'm jumping all over the place. But even if you look at PayPal, you look at what was earlier than PayPal? There was like some, I think it was like, I forgot what it's called. But like every single project that Elon Musk actually like thought of, people were like, nah, that's pretty dumb. That's pretty dumb. And it wasn't until, you know, someone else comes on the scene and fixes it or you know, adds some, you know, technological advancements that has been already out in the works, but, you know, Elon Musk grabs it and shoves it in, that it actually is usable or useful.
I'm just trying to see what project was it. Literally X.com, which is not what he changed the name, or Zip2.
Yeah, I think it was Zip2. Yes, Zip2. Like everyone thought that was just a terrible. It was supposed to be like a city direct. It was like a, from what I understand, it was like a phone book except electronic. And it was supposed to be like this new revolutionary thing. And I'm pretty sure it got bought out or something, right? Like, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure it was.
Well, it got bought out by Compaq, and Compaq doesn't even exist anymore. They're now like they've been bought out completely by Hewlett Packard.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Perfect. That's like, it's a perfect example of how, like, he sells you this dream, he gives you this idea of something, and it just he somehow creates value from nothing, and then you're caught just holding nothing, holding dust.
It's a repeat pattern too. Also, just like neuroscientists and brain computer interface experts. Like, I don't know how much more brain computer interface development we need to do as a society, because we kind of got it. It's your eyes and hands.
Well, I'm always going to disagree with that. I want a computer.
I'm sure there's probably like a real use case where this could be beneficial. You know, like. Maybe for like you know, like helping people with disabilities, maybe, or like with you know, some, there's got to be some like aspect that's going to be useful or like helpful to somebody. But functionally, you know, like his him literally saying it's going to cure mental illnesses, that's not even close to like a 1920s framework of understanding like mental dysfunction.
No, you're right. Like, because the thing is, the technology that this is kind of dependent on, or kind of is brain computer interfaces. And like, they're already a thing. Like, they are a thing that has, there are like, what do you call it? Competing companies that have created similar things that have like helped people with, Parkinson's, that help people. But like, it's from what I understand, it's more in line with helping people improve motor skills. It's not about like fixing mental illnesses, because I don't even think that's possible.
That's what I thought, right? Is that, you know, like it can assist people with disabilities, or it can help with like certain like it should help with accessibility issues. That's probably like where I saw the use case of the technology going. But like, especially to say Alzheimer's or autism, you know, Alzheimer's is a condition of like cognitive degeneration. How does having a computer help you with that? It doesn't even logically make sense.
Exactly.
And then autism, I'm like, that's not even a mental illness sometimes. I mean, of course, there's like varying degrees of how we understand autism today, right? But it's like, I don't know, if you take the neurodivergence model, it's not even 100% something that should or needs to be fixed, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But, and that's another very interesting thing. It's I feel like Elon Musk, even on a personal level, and I know I shouldn't do this because it's kind of parasocial, but I feel like he doesn't give a fuck about the medical aspects, about like about the people that he's impacting or could potentially be impacting, or the people he's lying to. He just sees shiny new technology and he goes, you know, cool metal thingy goes burr. Because like there's no world in which I would create a project, not have, you know, enough research, not have enough knowledge, and be like, oh yeah, this is gonna cure cancer. There's no world where I do that, because I don't want to, you know, create this false sense of hope in cancer patients. But he's perfectly fine in doing that when it comes to you know, people with Alzheimer's. And like, Alzheimer's kills. Like, Alzheimer's is a deadly, right, neurological disease, and he's perfectly fine with being like, oh yeah, we're gonna easy, you know, no complete lack of evidence. It's ridiculous.
I also just, there's something very interesting to his perspective and view on research, right? Where it's like, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is like probably like the best example of this, right? Where it's like they have whole divisions and like subsidiaries dedicated to just burning money to find new compounds and see if something works, you know, throwing all sorts of resources at the problem, to the point that they often justify raising the prices of medications in the U.S. or unfair business practices on this alleged need to do research. Whereas like Musk, like, and that's the thing, is like you can always have this boogeyman of, we don't know what we're going to find out, so let's just continue to do it with this expectation that it's worth doing something that may seem unproductive in the short run, right? But Musk has this bizarre perspective on research where it's like this foregone conclusion of what the technology could do.
Yeah, it's
without even like considering like existing concepts or existing like literature in the field. I don't know. I don't know where you even take, where you even get the mindset to do that.
Yeah, it is weirdly utilitarian. It's very like, I don't know. We're gonna do some cool shit, and you know, come watch me do it. It's very like, whatever we do, it'll justify it because I promise you're gonna have a cool product at the end of the day. It's like this weird like capitalist utilitarianism that's just really permeates all of this stuff, and it almost foregoes research. It foregoes all of like the important shit that you need to do before you even think about announcing a project like this.